You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
And I am indeed here. Apologies for those technical difficulties that we have been experiencing. Hopefully we have resolved them. While we do have them quietened down, we're going to definitely continue our show and we're going to go straight into the conversations that we were meant to be having. We're having a conversation around the privatization of certain SOEs or certain elements within state-owned entities. And we're looking at this on the back of the decision that was taken by the Parliamentary Committee to investigate the Takatso SAA deal. Since then, we know that unions like NUMSA have welcomed this investigation by the Special Investigations Unit that will be conducted. We know that there was a bit of opposition towards this, and we're going to take a look at this and try and make sense of the missing pieces. And to help me do that is independent analyst Kaya Sithole, who joins me on the line now to take a look at this and try and unpack this. Good evening, Kaya. Thanks for taking the time. Let's start with the decision to investigate that the Parliamentary Oversight Committee put forward that was approved. The Minister of Public Enterprises, Pravin Gordhan, was against this investigation taking place. Let's start there as our starting point. Why would a minister be opposed to this?
Well, a minister shouldn't be opposed to such a thing, but I think our reality is that when it comes to Pravin Gordhan, it is very difficult to kind of really understand what really informs his decision making. And I think obviously what we've learned, unfortunately, over the past 6 years since he was elevated into this portfolio is that his idea of what needs to be done and how things need to be done isn't necessarily resonant with a lot of people who feel that the best way to save or to rescue the state enterprises requires particular steps. I think if you look at how long it took to even appoint some of the senior executives in critical entities and it simply let them run adrift for a very long time, it kind of indicates that our expectations are not necessarily matched by his own intentions and his own efforts over time. So him saying that he doesn't want this to be investigated is kind of in line with how he's really conducted himself in the past 6 years.
Kaya, let's look at some of the other SOEs. Let's look at the Transnet Ports Authority. They gave us an update on Friday, as did Eskom. And in the case of Transnet, there was an update around the privatization of Durban ports and potentially Cape Town ports as well there. We know that Eskom on their side has had conversations around bringing on board the likes of Car Powership to provide alternative electricity. I guess what I'm getting at here is there are a lot of conversations that have been happening around let's do private-public partnerships, but in each case, these things have almost failed to take off the ground. Where's the problem? Why can't we get it right?
Well, it's very simple. The ANC does not believe in privatization. The ANC puts ministers in the economy cluster who specifically cannot believe in privatization because of their communist leanings and their communist tendencies. So whether you're looking at Abraham Patel, whether you're looking at Pravin Gordhan, it's kind of difficult to reconcile this idea of putting those that believe in the idea of the state running the commanding heights of economy, which is a very communist manifestation of how things ought to be done, and then trying to get them to sign up to this emerging trend of private sector partnerships. The fact that the ANC doesn't believe in it does not unfortunately mean that the ANC can stop it. And I think the evidence in front of us is that whether you look at the SAA transaction, whether you look at the Transnet conversation, or whether you even look at what might be the ultimate outcome of the Eskom split into three companies, it's kind of clear that the state on its own no longer has the resources to run these institutions on its own, so therefore it wants collaboration with private sector players. Now, of course, the problem is that when you have a political party that doesn't believe ideologically, but is forced into doing things because circumstances dictate them, it is not a political party that is then going to put together a cogent policy action plan that says, in relation to entities of this stature, in relation to entities of this type, when we do engage in private sector collaborations, this is how they must be structured, and this is what the ultimate outcomes are. So what you end up with is this confused mixed bag, this motley crew of different models and different ideas, where there isn't really a linear process, there isn't a linear formula of what we're trying to do and how we're trying to do it, so everybody does it on their own, and whether they succeed or not doesn't then inform the process of what happens next. And that's essentially where we've been with Pravin Gordhan in the past 6 years.
I like that you bring up the fact that this is confusing, because you mentioned that the ANC as a political party does not believe in this. However, circumstances have forced them into that respect. The president himself has come out, along with ministers like Minister Patel, to say that the need for public-private participation is there. And I guess the question then becomes, on whose terms really are we looking to do this? Because the state, as the government, stands up and says at these gatherings, at mining indabas and all of these things, that we need the private sector to put their money into things. We need, the state is talking of things like prescribed assets where it relates to pension funds and forcing the private sector to invest in public sector developments, but they want it done on their terms. How do we make sense of that in an election year, Kaya?
Well, we can't. And the reason we can't is because we need to clarify the different types of utterances and the different types of conversation that we have there. So what you refer to when the government says that, you know, the private sector must play its role and the private sector must show up, they aren't saying that the private sector must show up and be a partner in a co-governance, a co-management or a privatization drive. They are simply working on the argument that actually there seems to be, some people use the term investment strike, and essentially it seems to be that there's a reluctance from businesses to really take the type of gambles that are necessary to get an economy moving. So when the state says that we want you guys to play your part, they're simply saying, please unleash your balance sheets and invest in a particular economy. The conversation around how we want you to partner with us in making that happen is a completely separate one, because if you had gone to the private sector a couple of years ago and said, guys, we need you to partner with us in order to run a more efficient version of Transnet, well, then the question would have been, well, actually, as far as we're concerned, these are the variables, these are the matrices that we look at as businesses in order to assess the viability of a particular initiative. So if you're going to put these things up front, if you're going to make these commitments, then you're going to do it. And if not, then you're not going to partner. So that's the stillborn conversation, where the unavoidable reality is that as soon as you get private sector in, the state moves from 100% to a number that's different to that. The problem here is that whether that number is 49%, as they tried with SAA, or whether that number is anything in between, that's where the tension points come in, because ideologically the ANC believes that the best way to ensure that the state entities are leveraged in order to achieve these fundamentally important social outcomes is for the ANC to be at the epicenter of decision making. Now, of course, that simply means that when you go to capitalists and say, we want to be in charge but want your money, you can't imagine how difficult those conversations are going to be, and this is where we are.
Absolutely, and I think that's what I wanted to get at as well, is try and understand how then does the private sector come to the party and say, oh no, here, use our balance sheets as you will, given the track record that exists within the public sector up to now. Now, we've got clear evidence that private-public partnerships work, because, for example, we can look at the Gautrain as an isolated incident. That was a public-private partnership that still exists 10 years after it was intended to be created. It hasn't expanded as planned, but it still exists. So there is clear evidence to suggest that we can get this done if we can cohesively work together as both parties. The question becomes, Kaya, how do we do that?
The Gautrain is absolutely the worst example you could come up with, Jimmy. The reality is that the Gautrain is not economically viable. The Gautrain is only operational because of the patronage guarantee that the province of Gauteng has to put in order to balance the books. And the simple reality here is that the reality of private enterprise is that a private enterprise says, well, in order for us to roll out this service and in order for us to be able to balance our own books, this is the price that we must charge the end user. And if we charge the price to the end user, then you have to go back and say, well, can the desired customers afford it? And the simple answer is that you and I actually cannot afford the Gautrain. So in the absence of the patronage guarantee, the cost of accessing the Gautrain will be so extraordinary, no one would absolutely use it. So that is a question of the policy deliberations that one has to get into. So the government of Gauteng took the view that, well, in spite of the fact that this thing is actually not economically viable on its own, we think it's important to use it as a conduit for injecting economic activities into other parts of the economy. So that's the only reason the Gautrain exists. The Gautrain can never make money. The Gautrain will never make money in the absence of you and I bailing it out through the patronage guarantee. So those are the problems that always emerge when the private sector gets involved in that. What they chase in the form of returns that have to translate to the end price that they charge to the users, that, like you and myself, means that in most instances, those projects would never see the light of day, particularly given the socio-economic dimensions and the poverty dimensions of where we are in South Africa, even if you had to look at other provinces. So we still have this particular problem. But again, the question of partnering with the private sector then requires one to be honest about those trade-offs. It requires one to be able to understand what it is that citizens are being asked to sign up for. And I don't think anyone will argue that the Gauteng is not necessary. It is necessary, but as long as people understand the trade-off necessary in order to make it happen, then people are going to be saying, okay, we agree with this or we don't agree with this. And the problem is that right now it's been such an ad hoc model. The Gauteng is an exception. We've seen it happen. Others, we're not sure what the business modeling is. We're not sure what the state contribution must be in order for them to balance the books. And that's the problem with not having a concrete policy about how these partnerships ought to work.
Mm. But Kaya, when we look at the Gautrain, I acknowledge the point that it is not financially viable on its own and it required a certain level of intervention from that perspective. But shouldn't those kinds of conversations be the ones that sort of drive the ignition? Because at the end of the day, what we're trying to do here is we're trying to ignite the economy and no one seems to be wanting to take the first step. So as a concession from the private sector, they say, okay, cool, we understand it's not going to be an absolute profit kind of situation for us, and therefore we're not going to put our absolute balance sheet behind it. But at the same time, the government must then concede as well that there needs to be a balance. Isn't that how the balancing conversation is supposed to at least start? It might not end that way, but surely there must be a starting point somewhere.
Well, the central pillar of this conversation is the policy orientation and the policy direction that the country decides to take. And the reason that's important is that policy, the genesis of policy, is the public mandate that elected representatives have. So if we elect lawmakers and we say to them that we want you to run a particular economic model, then they feel that, well, if we don't run that economic model, we're going to be taken out of office. So you start off with the whole policy orientation of the country at large, and then you say to the private sector, and you say to business that this is what we think this country should do, this is what our policy orientation is, and in order to ensure that it delivers the type of socio-economic outcome that we have in mind, we need your help here and there. So once you get that done, then things start moving. The problem that you have in the past 15 years is that policy in South Africa is a matter of how sober or how drunk you are at the point in time that you have to interpret it, because it is fluid, it is flimsy, it is inconsistent, which simply means that the type of decisions that are necessary to facilitate a multi-year, a 10-year, a 20-year investment are subject to the simple question of, wait, what happens the day after we sign up for this commitment and then there's a new policy altogether? What happens the day after we sign up for this commitment and whoever oversees this policy decides that they're not interested in executing it? And until you fix those issues, it's kind of irrelevant how big the balance sheets of private business are. It's kind of irrelevant how big the commitments are, because in the absence of a strong and a consistent policy framework, none of those investment committees or these investment deliberations that have to make this decision are ever going to sign these things off. And that's what you've seen in the past 15 years, where everybody says there's money in the system, but there's no money in the system, if you know what that means.
Well, we certainly have a lot to unpack, and I think we're definitely going to unpack this as we go into next month. That is the election month of May. And Kaya, you and I are certainly going to have a conversation around policy, where it relates to prescribed assets and how they affect pension funds. But that conversation will have to be for another day. Thank you so much for the insights. Kaya Sithole, independent analyst, joining me to reflect on the privatization situation in South Africa.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.